In our last study, we finished through Joshua chapter 12. Joshua chapter 12 was a very easy chapter to summarize. We'll just briefly note a couple things about it again. The opening verses through verse 6 chronicle the kings that were conquered during Moses' lifetime. That would, of course, be the kings on the other side of the Jordan River. That would be the eastern side of the Jordan River. And that's going to include Sihon, king of the Amorites, and Og, king of Bashan. That's mentioned in both verses 2 and 4 of those opening verses of chapter 12. And then starting in chapter 12, verse 7, and going through the end of the chapter, verse 24, it will indicate all of the kings that were conquered during the time that Joshua was the leader of the children of Israel. Just a reminder, Moses died before entering the land of Canaan, which meant that he died before the nation of Israel entered the land of Canaan, crossing from the eastern side, going west over the Jordan River and into the Promised Land. And so the kings that are conquered during Joshua's time as a leader are those kings that are conquered on the other side, that is, on the western side, on the side of Jordan proper. And those kings are mentioned by name and where they were kings, king of Jericho, king of Bethel, and so forth, king of Jerusalem, and they are numbered, and the total is 31 going through the end of the chapter. And so we noted at the very end of our last class that there are 24 chapters in the book of Joshua, and chapter 12 obviously is the halfway point when you conclude that chapter. And so chapter 13 and following is the second half of the book of Joshua from the standpoint of the number of chapters. But there's something else that's equally significant, not just that it's the halfway point, but what we see in chapter 13, verse 1. Notice the opening verses. We mentioned this at the very conclusion of our study last time. Verse 1, Joshua was old, advanced in years, and the Lord said to him, "You are old, advanced in years, and there remains very much land yet to be possessed." And so though the children of Israel had conquered kings on the other side of the Jordan, Og and Sihon, and had conquered 31 kings and their respective domains, their respective lands and cities, up to this point, there was a lot more to do. Just a reminder, kings are not ascribed to huge geographical expanses like we might think of the king of, and then pick a country, the king of Spain, the king of England, or the king of whatever country you might think of. Most of these kings were regional or city rulers over much smaller territories. And so there are a lot more kings or rulers to conquer. And so if you have a king of sorts over every particular city, and there are hundreds and hundreds of cities, then you're going to have to conquer hundreds and hundreds of kings. And so just a reminder, the land was divided into lots of different groups, but then it's also divided under lots of different rulers ruled over much smaller land masses, cities as they are described in this context. So notice that. Even though a lot had been done, there's a lot that remains. And so verse 2 and following talks about the area that remains to be conquered. So if you look in verse 2, chapter 13, this is the land that yet remains. All the territory of the Philistines, all that of the Gershites. And the Philistines' land borders. It's going to be further west from Jordan, obviously, but it's on the extreme west of the land mass before you hit the Mediterranean. And so they were a seafaring people, and so they were coastal on the eastern side. That is, they were west of the Jordan, but they were on the eastern side of the Mediterranean. That hasn't been conquered. What else hasn't been conquered? From Shihor, which is east of Egypt, far as the border of Ekron northward, which is counted as Canaanite, five lords of the Philistines, and these are the major cities that you're going to see mentioned lots of times going forward into the reign of Saul, through the period of Judges before Saul and into the time of David, the Gazites, the Ashdodites, the Ashkelonites, Gittites, Ekronites, Avites, all those, they haven't been conquered yet. And so the rest of the territory of the land that is yet to be conquered, that's chronicled starting in verse 2 and going through verse 7. And so verse 7 tells us the command to Joshua was to divide this land as an inheritance to the nine tribes and half tribe of Manasseh. Remember, there are two and a half tribes that are going to occupy land on the other side of the river, that is, on the eastern side of the river. And that's going to be brought up next in verse 8. With the other half tribe, the Reubenites and the Gadites, that is, half of Manasseh, and Reuben and Gadites, received their inheritance, which Moses had given them beyond the Jordan eastward, that is, that they're on the eastward side, as Moses, the servant of the Lord, had given them. Just a brief reminder. When they initially petitioned Moses for that property, Moses assumed, incorrectly at first, that they were wanting to remain in that land and not go with the rest of the nine and a half tribes to drive out the people that were in the land of Canaan on the western side of the river. And so Moses said, you know, this something like this has happened before. We, as the children of Israel, refused to go up and take the land of Canaan initially, Numbers chapter 13. And because of that, God condemned us to wander in the wilderness for 40 years. So we don't want that kind of thing to happen again. And they said, no, that's not what we're about. We will go with you and we will help you conquer the inhabitants of the land of Canaan. But after we do so, we would like to inherit this land on this side of the river. And Moses, once he understood what it was that they were talking about, granted their wish. So that's already been determined long before we get to this point in the book of Joshua. And so that division of land has already been settled. And then we see what the parameters of their land was going to be. The land where Sihon was king of the Amorites, who reigned in Heshbon, and the children of Ammon, the Gileadites, and so forth. All of that's mentioned. The land of kingdom of Og, those are the ones that were defeated on the other side of the Jordan. I mentioned in chapter 12, verses 1 through 6. Moses had defeated and cast them out. Nevertheless, the children of Israel did not drive out the Gershrites and the Maacathites, and the Gershrites and the Maacathites dwell among the children of Israel to this day. More about that later. Only to the tribe of Levi he had given no inheritance, and that's because they received cities in regions around cities rather than larger land masses. And so more about that's going to be spelled out. Tribe of Levi didn't get receive an inheritance. The sacrifices of the Lord God of Israel made by fire are their inheritance, as he said to them. The point is, the children of Israel were largely going to be sustained by the shekels that were given into what is later known as the temple shekel, and the donations to the sanctuary, and at this time to the tabernacle. And they were going to be supported by means of the sacrifices that were offered. And so they received a portion of the foods and the grains and so forth that were offered in sacrifices. And so what we see begin to be spelled out in verses 15 and following is the specific territories, the north, south, east, west, the borders, and the demarcations of the property that are going to be given to the different tribes. And it's going to start with the tribes on the eastern side, which is going to be Reuben and Gad and half the tribe of Manasseh. And so as you start in verse 15, Moses had given to the tribe of the children of Reuben and their inheritance according to their families. And then it describes the territory starting in verse 16. And so all of the areas of the plain, the city, the regions, the kingdoms that belonged to different people who ruled before that. Moses had arranged all of this in advance before his death, and that's their territory going down through verse 23. So that's spelled out for the tribe of Reuben. The next, starting in verse 24, is the land that Moses had given as an inheritance to the tribe of Gad, to the children of Gad according to their families. And then the territory was, and it's spelled out starting in verse 25, the regions and the cities and the land of the Ammonites and so forth. And it talks about the borders again, north, south, east, and west. And they received territories that had belonged to the kingdom of Sihon, king of Heshbon, that they defeated before they got to the land of Canaan. And so it concludes in verse 28, this is the land that they're going to inherit. And then the latter part of the chapter, verse 29, talks about the land inheritance that's going to be given to half the tribe of Manasseh. It was for half the tribe of the children of Manasseh, according to their families. Well, what did they receive? Territory is spelled out in verse 30 and following. Their territory was from Mahanaim, Bashan, the kingdom of Og, king of Bashan. Again, one of the two that was defeated, Og and Sihon. And all the towns of Jair, which are in Bashan. Notice 60 cities, just as a repeat of something I noticed before. The kings were often kings of a much, much smaller territory than we might usually think of. Not huge countries like France, Germany, England, so forth that we mentioned before, but of much, much smaller regions and often just of cities. So in this one part of one region, on the eastern side of the River Jordan, the half-tribe of Manasseh received a territory that included the towns of Jair, which are in Bashan, and there were 60 cities there. Now, this doesn't tell us that there were 60 kings over all of them, but my point is that the geographical divide and the rulers of those areas is different than what we are usually used to thinking about. And so that's all been determined again by Moses in advance of the beginning of the period of conquest. And then the areas that are distributed are specified even further in verses 32 and following. These are the areas which Moses distributed as an inheritance in the plains of Moab, one of the descendants of Lot, Ammon and Moab, on the other side of the Jordan by Jericho eastward. And so that's on the eastern side. And notice it says, so the tribe of Levi, Moses had given no inheritance. Again, that's the second time we see that in the chapter. Verse 14 says the same thing. Thus the Lord God of Israel was their inheritance, as he had said to them. And so there's a sense, of course, in which that principle applies to us today. What is it that we inherit? We inherit the Lord God. What does that mean? Well, the Bible says in the writings of Peter that we are all priests. We're all part of a special kingdom. We're God's own people. And so what is it that we're going to inherit? We're going to inherit what it means to be in relationship and fellowship with God throughout all eternity. And so this is the beginning, of the division of land. Chapters 12 summarizes very quickly two kings that were defeated by Moses before they crossed the river, then 31 kings up to that point defeated by Joshua after they crossed the river. And then we are going to go a little bit more slowly as we go throughout the rest of the division of the land according to tribes. So chapter 13, you notice the summarization that we present in the outline, listing of the lands not yet conquered for six verses, count of the division of land on the other side among the tribes of Reuben, Gad, half tribe of Manasseh. And so that's the very quick whirlwind summary. We went through that in a little bit more detail. Chapter 14, first part of the chapter, I'm looking at the summary, and then we'll look at more detail in the text itself. First part of the chapter details the land of Canaan that's going to be divided according to the inheritance and the number of tribes of Israel. The first five verses are going to spell that out. Last part of the chapter contains an account of the request made by Caleb for the land of Hebron. Very quickly, remember there were 12 men, one from each of the tribes, that was sent into the land of Canaan back in Numbers chapter 13 to check out, to spy out, to reconnoiter the land. And Caleb was one of those men. Joshua was one of those men as well. And the 10 men that the children of Israel listened to were the ones who said, you know, those folks are giants. We're grasshoppers in our sight. We can't do this. We can't go up and take the land. Now, God had already told them that they could. And Caleb simply restated what God said. He says, you know, let's go up and possess it. We're well able to do so. And it wasn't braggadocio that made him say that. He wasn't, you know, full of himself. He was acting in faith because God said you could do it. Let's go up and do it. So it is more reliance on God and a faith and trust in God's promises than it was on the strength of Caleb himself. Though independently of that issue, the strength of his faith, he was indeed a strong man. More about that we're going to see later. So notice that the rest of the chapter contains an account of Caleb's request for a specific land in the area of Hebron. And he's mentioned specifically because of his faithfulness in verse 8 and verse 14 of the chapter. That request is going to be honored. So there's a unique call out, as it were, in this chapter that addresses not just land on the eastern side that was summarized before, but specifically the land that was going to be given to Caleb, the land of Hebron. And so notice these are the areas, verse 1 of chapter 14, these are the areas which the children of Israel inherited in the land of Canaan, which Eleazar the priest, Joshua the son of Nun, and the heads of the fathers of the tribes of the children of Israel distributed as an inheritance to them. Now, I want to call attention to this. We read that verse for good reason. Remember, Moses died before he entered the land of Canaan. got to see the land of Canaan from a mountaintop, and he was not allowed to enter. And how it was that he died and how it was that he was buried, those details aren't spelled out for us. But additionally, we also noted before we got to the end of the book of Deuteronomy that Aaron, the brother of Moses, the older brother of Moses, by about 3 years, as I recall, that he also died. So remember, Aaron had four sons, Nadab and Abihu. Back in the book of Leviticus, we see their death chronicled because they offered to God from the standpoint of fire, something that was not allowed. It's described as profane. It was something that was unauthorized by God. It was contrary to God's request, contrary to God's principles. And there is also an indication in that context that there was some drunkenness involved. More about that as you go back and review that material. Now, the reason to bring that up is Moses had died, so Joshua was the leader, but Aaron had also died. So Aaron had four sons, Nadab and Abihu, we just mentioned, had died already because of their unfaithfulness, which left two more sons, Eleazar and Ithamar. So the reason I bring that out is, notice what we see here. It says the area that's going to be divided is going to be done so according to the inheritance and so forth that had started back in Moses' day. But now it's going to be administered, it's going to be distributed, the inheritance says, by means of the supervision of Eleazar the priest. So he's not just a Levite, he's a specific child of Aaron. Who was a Gershon Kohath Merari, and go through the seed line and so forth. Only the descendants of Aaron are going to function as high priest. So Eleazar is now the high priest. So Ithamar is the brother who could have also served, but Eleazar is the one that's serving now. And also through the work of Joshua, the son of Nun, that's the leader after Moses, and the heads of the fathers of the tribes of the children of Israel distributed as an inheritance to them. So the administration or superintendency of this distribution of land has both Joshua involved, the elders involved, but also the high priest. And the high priest at this point is Eleazar. Just something maybe not so significant from one perspective, but significant from another, that reminds us that neither Moses nor Aaron, the two brothers, were alive at this point. So a new generation. All right, so the inheritance was by lot. That is, it was determined by means of the casting of lots, as the Lord had commanded by the hand of Moses for the nine tribes and the half tribe. So this casting of lots determined under God's auspices through Moses had already been determined. That's back in the writings of Moses, Genesis through Deuteronomy, primarily the book of Deuteronomy. For Moses had given the inheritance of the two tribes and the half tribe on the other side of the Jordan, but to the Levites he'd given no inheritance. That's a third time in the last chapter and a half that we've noticed that. And so Levi doesn't get an inheritance. They receive cities, but the Lord's going to be their inheritance. So the children of Joseph become two tribes. Remember, there's 12 sons of Jacob: Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Asher, Issachar, Zebulun, Joseph, and Benjamin. And so, but Levi doesn't get a land inheritance. That's 11. And Joseph doesn't receive anything in his name. That brings us down to 10. Well, how do you get back up to 12? Back up to 12. Joseph's sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, receive a double portion in honor for what their father did, Joseph, of being faithful in the land of Egypt and being the means by which providentially the promise that God made to Abraham was fulfilled. And so that's how you get back to 12. Joseph is removed, his two sons take the place, Levi is removed, and you still have 12 tribes. And so the children of Joseph are two tribes, Manasseh and Ephraim, and they gave no part to the Levites in the land except cities to dwell in. So that's the fourth time, if I'm counting correctly, that we've noted since we started this session, that the Levites are specifically said not to have inherited any particular land. But they got cities with their common land. So that was a typical thing that was done. Cities were often, not always, fortified, and people would live often within the confines of the walls of a city for protection, but the gardens and common lands around them were outside of those walls. So the cities in their common land. So again, this is a much, much, much smaller area than what the other tribes are receiving. So they are receiving cities with surrounding lands, but not much more than that. So the Levites are given land, cities to dwell in, with their common lands for their livestock and their property. Again, as the Lord had commanded Moses, so the children of Israel did, and they divided the land. We noticed this before, and just want to repeat it. You're going to see this over and over and over again, where God tells us through this particular text, the book of Joshua, that this is all in accord with what God had already determined through the writings and the hand and the administration of Moses. So as the Lord commanded Moses, that setting is all over the place. So that tells us through verse 5 how that particular land is going to be divided on the eastern side, 2.5 tribes, and then on the western side, the 9.5 tribes. And notice that it is not given according to cities. Land, the Levites don't receive according to land as everybody else did, but they receive cities. All right, let's continue. And this is verse 6 and following. We already summed it up by looking at what we have in our handout, but we're going through in a little bit more detail through the text itself. Now the children of Judah came to Joshua in Gilgal, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, that's the Caleb who was with Joshua, who was one of the two men who said, hey, we can do this. We can do what God wants us to do. He said, you know the word which the Lord has said to Moses, the man of God, concerning you and me and Kadesh Barnea. And that's when they were going to go up and take the land initially back in Numbers chapter 13. And so he's just reminding them that. So if you go back in Numbers chapter 13, the opening verses, you'll see Caleb mentioned there by name. I was 40 years old at that time when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land. So here's, 40 years later, after Moses had died, and after Joshua becomes a leader and they're about ready to go into the land of Canaan, Caleb is rehearsing, saying, I was 40 years old at this time when I was one of the guys sent up by Moses to go and check out the land. And I brought back word to Moses as it was in my heart. Nevertheless, my brethren who went up with me, not Joshua, who is also still alive, who's the son of Nun, he was one of the 12, but the rest of the 10 made the heart of the people melt. But I wholly follow the Lord my God. That's Caleb there. So Moses swore on that day, saying, surely the land where your foot has trodden shall be your inheritance and your children's forever, because you have wholly followed the Lord my God. And so Moses said, you know, the places in which you went as you spied out the land where your feet have trodden, God's going to give that to you because you wholly follow God. So now, behold, the Lord has kept me alive, and he said, these 45 years. And so 45 years means that it's 40 years after that, which means Moses has been dead for a few years already, and we're at least 5 years, it would appear, into the time that Joshua was a leader. And so he said, for 45 years, God's kept me alive, ever since the Lord spoke his word to Moses while Israel wandered in the land. And here I am now, I'm 85. Notice we mentioned before the strength of Caleb to take the land was his faith initially. But in this context, he refers to his physical strength, not the strength of his faith. And yet I'm as strong this day as I was on the day that Moses sent me. And you might think, well, that's kind of bragging. But there are other individuals who mentioned in the context of Scripture who were as strong in the day as on the day that they died as they were in their youth. And so the circumstances of their death then, with reference to Moses and others, we don't want to get into. But the point is, he was still strong. All right. 45 years later, since the Lord spoke his word to Moses when Israel wandered in the wilderness, and now I'm 85 years old, still as strong as I was on that day that Moses sent me, just as my strength was then, so now, verse 11, so now is my strength for war, both for going out and for coming in. And so his point is, you know, I still have to go out and conquer this particular portion of land that I want to inherit. So I was willing to do this 45 years ago when we were initially sent to the land of Canaan. I'm still willing to do that. So now, therefore, verse 12 and following, I want to emphasize this because it's a huge, huge message about the nature of Caleb's faith. Now, therefore, give me this mountain of which the Lord spoke in that day. For you have heard in that day how the Anakim were there. And that's usually a reference to the perception, at least, if not in actuality, the size of large people, the Anakim were there. And that the cities were great and fortified. It may be, notice this, there's some degree of humility there. May be that the Lord will be with me, and I shall be able to drive them out, as the Lord said. So notice the degree of faith that he had before when they were told to conquer the land of Canaan the first time, Numbers 13, he still has. And Joshua blessed him and gave Hebron to Caleb. No, he says he gave it to him, but he had to go take it. So remember, every place that the sole of your feet shall trod, opening verses of Joshua 1, that have I given to you. So Hebron therefore became the inheritance of Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, to this day, because he wholly followed the Lord God of Israel. That's at least the second time, if not more, that that expression is used. He followed the Lord my God in verse 8. He wholly followed the Lord God of Israel in verse 13. And the name of Hebron formerly was Kirjath-Arba, for Arba was the greatest man among the Anakim. Then the land had rest from war. And so, again, the division of the land is going to be spelled out in much, much slower detail as you go forward throughout the rest of the book of Joshua. This one's very, very slow. The chapter before, chapter 12, very quickly through 31 cities, remaining land to be conquered, and the division of the land on the eastern side of the 2.5 tribes. Slows down when it talks about the Levites in the opening part of the verse. Verses of chapter 14, and then really slow is when it talks about the division of land given to one man, to Hebron, and not one tribe, but one man. And so the details of that, of course, are important because of the faithfulness of Caleb. And so notice it says the children of Judah came to Joshua in Gilgal, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, said, and so he was of the tribe of Judah. So the territory that he inherits is not the sum total of the land that's going to be given to the tribe of Judah. So if you go back and you look at all the listings of the men back in Numbers chapter 13, and says, here are the people that you're going to send. It says in verse 6 of chapter 13, from the tribe of Judah, Caleb, the son of Jephunneh. And so the land that Caleb receives here is his, not Judah's, but his as an individual member. So Joseph doesn't receive any portion of land, but he receives a double portion through his two sons, through Ephraim and Manasseh. And that's pretty significant from the standpoint of territory. But in this context, Hebron is given to a single individual of the tribe of Judah, and that's going to be Caleb. And the reason I bring that up is when we get into chapter 15, we see division to the rest of the tribe of Judah specified. So look at the handout and the very quick summary, four lines. This chapter contains an account of the territory given to the tribe of Judah, first 12 verses. Territory given to Caleb and his family in verse 13 and 20, that's already mentioned before in chapter 14. And also listing the cities that are mentioned, verses 21 through 62. So it's a long chapter. With regard to what some may call a contradiction between chapter 3, verse 10, and chapter 15, 63, we're going to get to that when we get to 2 Samuel chapter 5, verse 7. You might not understand what the contradiction is, but we'll see it when we get to that point in the text. All right, so verses 1 and following, this is the lot of the tribe of the children of Judah according to their families, the border of Edom. That's the descendants of Esau at the wilderness of Zin, not Sin, Zin. Southward was the extreme southern border, and their southern border began at the shore of the Salt Sea. That's the Dead Sea from the bay that faces southward. Then it went out to the southern side of the ascent of Akrabim, passed along to Zin, descended on the south side to Kadesh Barnea, which is where they were initially supposed to go up and conquer the land. And then it talks about the rest of the borders. Goes from there to Asmon, to the Brook of Egypt, the border ended at the sea. That shall be your southern border. The eastern border was the Salt Sea. Border on the northern was the mouth of the Jordan. So anyway, the north, south, east, and west borders are described, and specific geographical landmarks, either rivers or mountains or something else, are mentioned. And then it talks about some of the cities and valleys that are going to be encompassed in the territory that they're going to inherit. Notice it calls attention to the Jebusite city. The Jebusites were still dwelling in the Jebusite city, which is Jerusalem, and it notes that in parentheses in verse 8, until the time of David, which is quite a bit down the road in history. And again, the valley that's included, the Valley of Hinnom, the borders go around to Baalah, which is Kirjath-Jearim, then it goes westward to Mount Seir. Anyway, all that's spelled out until it gets to the western border was the coastline of the Great Sea, which is going to be the Mediterranean. This is the border of the children of Judah all around according to their families. And so that's pretty much geographical description of everything. And then in chapter 15, continuing in 13, Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, he gave a portion among the children of Judah, according to the commandment of the Lord to Joshua, namely Kirjath-Jearba, which is Hebron. Arba was the father of Anak. And then it's going to talk about how he's going to conquer these places. So he was given that territory, prescribed it for him in the end of the last chapter, and now he's going to be conquering it. He doesn't just receive it in name. He's going to take it in actuality. And so Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, he gave a portion among the children of Judah according to the commandment of the Lord to Joshua. Then it spells out the areas. He drove out three sons of Anak from there, mentions them by name, the children of Anak. Went from there to the inhabitants of Debir, formerly known as Kirjath-Sefer. And he said, whoever attacks Kirjath-Sefer and takes it, I'm going to give this daughter as wife. And Othniel, the son of Kenaz, the brother of Caleb, took it. And he was given her his daughter's wife. She asked for a field, dismounted, and so forth. What do you want? Give me a blessing. Since you've given me land in the south, give me also springs of water. And he gave her the upper and lower springs. So the specifics of how this particular area was conquered is spelled out in this context. Now, starting in verse 20 and going through the end of the chapter, we're not going to read through this, but just note it very quickly. This is the inheritance of the tribe of the children of Judah according to their families, the cities at the limits of the tribe of the children of Judah toward the border of Edom in the south were, and then it mentions all those cities, all right? So drop all the way down to verse 33. That particular region encompassed 29 cities with their villages. That's interesting. Not just cities, but with their villages. So there's a larger geographical area referred to as a city and smaller geographical areas that are lying outside, that is outlying from the cities that are described as the villages. So that's that one territory starting earlier in verse 20 going down to this point. But then there's another area in the lowland, and he begins to name all of those places starting in verse 33. Get down to verse 36. Those are 14 cities with their villages. So cities and villages in verse 32, cities and villages in verse 36. Starting in verse 37, another area mentioned by the names of their cities. Goes all the way down to verse 41, 16 cities with their villages in this region. Starting again in verse 42, another list of cities, 9 in verse 44 with their villages and with their cities and their villages. And then starting in Ekron and going to Ashdod and their villages, Ashdod and its towns and its villages, verse 47, Gaza with its towns and its villages, as far as the Brook of Egypt and the Great Sea with its coastline. And so, again, all of this is regional cities and villages that are described. Then in the mountain country, verse 28, spelled out, and those are 11 cities and villages through verse 51. Another area, Arab, Duma, Eshian, and so forth, 9 cities and villages, verse 54. Next series of lists in 55 through 57, 10 cities and their villages. Verses 58 and 59, 6 cities and their villages. Verse 60, just 2 cities with their villages in the land of the wilderness. Starting next in verse 61, 6 cities and their villages. And then it says, as for the Jebusites, we noticed them before, they are still living in the land of Jerusalem, not only at this time, but even during the days of David. The children of Israel could not drive them out, but the Jebusites dwell with the children of Judah at Jerusalem to this day. All right, so the division of the land continues. At some points, it whirls through, you know, lots and lots of cities and villages and so forth, given to a single tribe like we just saw. And sometimes it slows down and describes one particular person's inheritance. And so that's what we've seen to this point. So chapter 16, this chapter and the next provide us an accountment of the lot of the lands that's going to be given to the sons of Joseph. And so that's, of course, two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. And so, verse 16, the lot fell to the children of Joseph from the Jordan by Jericho to the waters of Jericho on the east to the wilderness that goes up from Jericho through the mountains to Bethel. And that's the land that's going to be given to Manasseh and Ephraim. They took their inheritance. Verse 4, land of Ephraim's border, starting in verse 5, is going to be spelled out. Where does it start? Just read the rest of the text. The border of their inheritance on the east side was this. The border went out towards the sea, went out towards the north in this particular direction, went out eastward, passed by, and just read through verse 6. All the borders are spelled out. Comes down to the land of Jericho, came out at the Jordan. Border continues in verse 8, ends at the sea. This was the inheritance of the tribe of the children of Ephraim according to their families, verse 8. The separate cities for the children of Ephraim were among the inheritance of the children of Manasseh. All their cities were their villages. And notice this, we're going to come back to this later in the latter part of Joshua and also the beginning of the book of Judges. They did not drive out the Canaanites who dwelt in Gezer, but the Canaanites dwell among them to this day and have become forced laborers. Now remember, the Gibeonites that deceived them made a contract, a covenant with Joshua. and they made them woodcutters and water bearers and that sort of thing. And that was by an agreement. Here, these people are still living in their midst. They haven't driven them out, but they subjugated them. They turned them into servants and caused them to become forced laborers. And so that's not only, that's not the first time this happened. We saw this already with reference to what happened with the Gibeonites. All right, chapter 17. Continues, gives an account of the sons of Joseph. We already saw that before in the previous chapter. Deals with land that's going to be given to Manasseh. Note, because the importance of the sons of Joseph, they're given a larger portion. Verse 14 spells that out. So Joseph, because of the unique position that he had, not just among the brothers, because he was favored by his father, but among God's providential care, that he was the key pivot, the linchpin, so to speak, by which the children of Israel are going to leave the land of Canaan and end up in the land of Egypt. Joseph going there first, being there roughly 20 years before his brothers came looking for food, not recognizing that Joseph was the one who was second command after Pharaoh. And then the second time Joseph identifies himself, reveals himself to his brethren, and calls for the rest of the family, including his father, to come live with them. And so that's how they ended up in the land of Egypt. It's Joseph. And so because of that, Joseph is honored after that point and receives a double blessing through each of his sons. All right, so that's spelled out in detail in the book of Genesis and also in the opening chapters of the book of Exodus. And it's spelled out now with reference to the land division that's already been determined by Moses in the book of Deuteronomy. All right, chapter 17, we just mentioned the survey. You look in verse 1, there's also a lot for the tribe of Manasseh. All right, for he was the firstborn of Joseph. All right, namely for Machir, the firstborn of Manasseh, the father of Gilead, because he was a man of war. And then there's a lot for the rest of the children of Manasseh according to their families. And the family names are spelled out, verses 2 and following. Notice, and we saw this before in the book of Deuteronomy, that the daughters of Zelophehad came to Moses and saying, our father had no sons. And generally speaking, the birthrights and the land inheritance was given from father to sons. But there were no sons. And so that meant their father, who obviously was a son of somebody else, would not have been able to pass along the inheritance that he was going to receive. So Zelophehad, the son of Hepher, the son of Gilead, the son of Machir, the son of Manasseh, had no sons, but only daughters. And here's their names: Mahla, Noah, Hogla, Milcah, Tirzah. They came near before Eleazar the priest. Remember, this was done and determined before when Aaron was the priest and when Moses was the leader. But now Eleazar is the priest and Joshua is the leader. And before the rulers, and they said, verse 4, the Lord commanded Moses to give us an inheritance among our brothers. Therefore, according to the commandment of the Lord, he gave them an inheritance among their father's brothers. And so they received a just portion, even though that there were no male descendants of Zelophehad. All right? So we continue. 10 portions fell to Manasseh besides the land of Gilead and Bashan, which on the side, the daughters of Manasseh received an inheritance among his sons, and the rest of Manasseh's sons had the land of Gilead. All right, so the rest of this is going to talk about the territory of Manasseh, verse 7 and following. Verse 8 and following, Manasseh had the land of Tappuah, the border descendants of this brook. Here are the cities of Ephraim, are among the cities of Manasseh. The border of Manasseh was on the north side, ended at the sea to the southward. The dimensions and northward, dimensions again are given, or that is the range. And verse 11, Issachar and Asher, Manasseh had these particular towns and these particular towns, and the inhabitants of these particular towns came to them. The children of Manasseh, notice again that we're going to see this repeatedly now. Children of Manasseh could not drive out the inhabitants of those cities, but the Canaanites were determined to dwell in that land. And it happened when the children of Israel grew strong that they put the Canaanites to forced labor, but did not utterly drive them out. So that's the second time that we've seen that. We saw in the closing verse of chapter 16, verse 10, they didn't drive them out, but they forced them to become laborers. Same thing is spelled out in this context, verse 13. Continuing, verse 14, the children of Joseph spoke to Joshua, saying, why have you given us but one lot and one portion to inherit, since we're a great people? Now, this is going to be an issue going forward in which there's some tribal rivalry based upon presumed importance of one tribe over another tribe due to blessings in the past, due to population size and so forth. And so here's a little bit of an egomaniacal wrangling here. So you only gave us one portion. We're a great people, and so forth. We should be blessed more. And Joshua said, okay, you're a great people. Then you go to the forest country and you clear a place for yourself. Verse 15, there in the land of the Perizzites and the giants, since the mountains of Ephraim are too confined for you. So you want more? Take more. And so the children of Joseph said, the mountain country is not enough for us. And the Canaanites who dwell in the land of the valley have chariots of iron, both those are of Beth Shean and its towns, and those are of the valley of Jezreel. And Joshua spoke to the house of Joseph, to Ephraim and Manasseh, saying, you are a great people, and you have great power. You shall not have one lot only. So here's the point. Each of the tribes receive a share. And so Joseph receives a double portion through his sons. But the mountain country shall be yours, although it is wooded. You shall cut it down, and its farthest extent shall be yours. You shall drive out the Canaanites, though they have iron chariots and are strong. So they not only realized that they should have received a double portion because they were descendants of Joseph, they kind of demanded it. Hey, we're bigger than that. We want better than that. He says, okay, you go take this land. All right, so chapter 18 and following is more about the remainder of the land and how it's going to be divided. And so we're going to see some unique things are going to be spelled out, that the tabernacle is going to be set up in the city of Shiloh. Now, you may not have listened to the lesson already, but I encourage you to do so if you get a chance to listen to the sermon that was presented on Sunday, March 22nd, and look at the slides that accompany that sermon. And it's not because it's anything special, but it does draw attention to something that's interesting that I think you'll appreciate. I hope you'll appreciate. So if you turn to Acts chapter 7, Acts chapter 7 is Stephen's address before the Sanhedrin. And I'm not going to go through everything we did in the context of the sermon yesterday, but I will call attention to this. In this context, it mentions Joshua by name, and Joshua is only mentioned twice by name in the New Testament. Now, let me back up and explain something. The name that's translated as Joshua appears hundreds of times, 917 times, if my memory serves correctly, but only two times does it apply to this particular man, Joshua. And the reason why I say 917 times is because the name that's more often than not translated as Jesus is also the name that's translated as Joshua. Why? Joshua is Old Testament, Jesus is New Testament. The names are the same. Yeshua is referring to Jesus, but it's also referring to Joshua. But the context in Joshua in Acts chapter 7 demands that it's Joshua. Now, why do I bring that up? Because in Acts chapter 7, it says, with reference to what Moses had done. Moses was the leader, brought them out of the land of Egypt, brought them to Mount Sinai. In Mount Sinai, he received the oracles to give to us. It talks about the giving of the commandments, the giving of the sacrificial system. But it also talks about the wilderness, the tabernacle that was given to them in the wilderness. Our fathers had the tabernacle of witness in the wilderness, as he appointed instructing Moses, that is, as God appointed instructing Moses to make it according to the pattern which he'd seen. Now, so the point is, he segues from all this history going back to Abraham, coming down to Moses, getting to the point of what happens at Sinai, and talks about what takes place at Sinai with reference to the construction of the tabernacle, and says, I'm going to tell you something about that. Our fathers received it in turn, that is, it was going to be passed down over time. It was also, watch this, brought with Joshua into the land possessed by the Gentiles, whom God drove out before the face of our fathers until the days of David. Now, did you catch that? The tabernacle system that started at Sinai continued not only through the wilderness, wanderings for the duration of the 40 years, but it was under Joshua's leadership that it came into the land of Canaan. Now, that's what we see mentioned here in chapter 18 and verse 1, that the tabernacle is going to be set up. Now, he segues from this very quickly in Acts chapter 7 to say that that tabernacle gave way, that is, yielded to Solomon, who built the house. That's the temple. So Moses, tabernacle at Sinai, Joshua, tabernacle, brought it into the land of Canaan at Shiloh, chapter 18, verse 1 of Joshua. And then he segues to Solomon building the temple. And then he says, but God's bigger than that temple, which means he's also bigger than the tabernacle. And then he accuses them of killing the just one who was equal to God, who was also equally bigger than the temple tabernacle. So that's an interesting thing that's brought in Acts chapter 7. So we go back to chapter 18. So the whole congregation, the children of Israel, assembled together at Shiloh and set up the tabernacle of meeting there, and the land was subdued before them. So look at the summarization of this. Chapter 18, the tabernacle was set up in Shiloh, verse 1, with regard to this city. Clark, that's in his commentary, states, this appears to have been a considerable town about 15 miles from Jerusalem in the tribe of Ephraim and nearly in the center of the whole land. To this place, both the camp of Israel and the Ark of the Lord were removed from Gilgal after a residence of 7 years. Here the tabernacle remained 130 years. We're going to talk about that as we go a little bit further. We're going to get into the ministry of Samuel, Eli, and so forth and during the period of Judges, which is coming up next, and then into the writings of Samuel, who is going to anoint the first king, Saul, and the second king, David, and we're going to pay attention to where the tabernacle is and the role it plays in the period of history when we get to that point. So the thing I want to notice is that Stephen, in his address to the religious leaders, the council on that occasion, alludes to Joshua bringing the tabernacle into the land of Canaan as they defeat it. So there it is. That's what happened in this context, but referred to historically after the fact, long after the fact, in Acts chapter 7. And so there remained among the children of Israel 7 tribes which had not yet received their inheritance. So we've gone through some of it. We went through 2.5 tribes and the 3rd tribe, the rest of Manasseh. And then we went through the Ephraim and Manasseh and the land of Judah. But we're not done yet. There's 7 more. So Joshua says to the children of Israel, how long are you going to neglect to go and possess the land which the Lord God of your fathers has given you? So notice the division of land territory isn't taking place now. It had been determined by Lot, by Moses, before they got to the land of Canaan. And so some people are dawdling. They're not doing what God has wanted them to do. How long are you going to neglect to do this? So he says, pick out from among you 3 men for each tribe, and I'm going to send them. They're going to rise, and they're going to go through the land. They're going to survey it according to their inheritance. Notice, not just determining this now that you're going to inherit it. I'm going to send you to survey the land that has already been determined that you're going to inherit. And then they're going to divide it in 7 parts, all right? Judah's going to remain in their territory in the south, the house of Joseph in the territory of the north. Anyway, the rest of the division is going to be spelled out here. Notice again a reminder that we've seen repeatedly. The Levites have no part among you, for the priesthood of the Lord is their inheritance. That's not the first time. That's at least the second. We've seen that. They receive cities and common lands. Gad, Reuben, half the tribe of Manasseh, they got that land over there. So the men arose to go away. Joshua charged those who go survey the land, go walk through it, survey it, come back, that I may cast lots for you before the Lord in Shiloh. So the men went, passed through the land, and wrote, surveying a book in 7 parts by cities, and they came to Joshua at the camp in Shiloh. Then Joshua cast lots for them in Shiloh before the Lord, and there Joshua divided the land to the children of Israel according to their divisions. We just noted in chapter 18, verse 10, Joshua cast lots for them in Shiloh before the Lord, and there Joshua divided the land to the children of Israel according to their divisions. Now, we mentioned multiple times, and we want to flesh this out a little bit more, that a lot of the distribution of the land, tribal inheritance, was determined in part, and I notice I say in part, by Moses before he died. But not all of the details. The issues of the 2.5 tribes, that was mentioned. The issue of the daughters of Zelophehad, that was mentioned. But as you get into the last chapter of the book of Numbers, and that's Numbers chapter 34, I'm sorry, last chapter of Deuteronomy is chapter 34, but the last chapter of the book of Numbers is chapter 36. But if you go into chapter 34, the Lord spoke to Moses saying, you command the children of Israel and tell them this. When you come into the land, this is the land that you're going to inherit. And God, to Moses, says, here are the borders. Southern border, verse 3. Border here is going to turn. Border's going to turn, that's verse 4. Border's going to turn, verse 5. The western border, verse 6. This is your northern border, verse 7. Mount Hor, this is your going to border at the entrance of Hamath. The border's going to proceed to Ziphron, verse 9. Mark out eastward this border. The border's going to go down to Shepham in verse 11. So each one of these verses is talking about borders that God had laid out as he spoke to Moses. All right. Then Moses commanded the children of Israel, saying, "This is the land which you shall inherit by lot, which the Lord has commanded to give to the nine tribes and to the half tribe." Notice that's only nine and a half. What about the other two and a half? That's the whole thing that was determined concerning Gad and Manasseh and so forth, the two and a half tribes that were mentioned earlier. And Reuben, I didn't mention all of them. And so for the tribe of children of Reuben and Gad and half tribe of Manasseh, they're going to receive this land. And so, but the rest of the land, that needs to be divided. So we saw some of that Judah, we saw some of that with Joseph and the rest of Manasseh. But notice in verse 16, there's a system that's in place before Moses died. That's not till Numbers, the end of the book. Lord spoke to Moses and said, "These are the names of the men who shall divide the land among you as an inheritance." Now, who are they? Eleazar the priest. That's Aaron's son. And Joshua, the son of Nun. That's Moses' successor. Well, who are the rest of those folks? Well, they're spelled out in verses 18. "You'll take one leader of every tribe to divide the land for the inheritance, and here are the names of the men." And they are spelled out starting in verse 18, going through verse 28, and then it says, "These are the ones the Lord commanded to divide the inheritance among the children of Israel in the land of Canaan." That's what we see being spelled out in chapter 18 of the book of Joshua. And again, notice the cities or Levites comes into play in the very next chapter, chapter 35 of Numbers. So let's go back to where we were in the book of Joshua, chapter 18. And so they're going to divide the rest of the land according to the dictates given by Moses back in the book of Numbers, chapter 34, as to who was going to be involved in the final decision as to the breakdown of the land on the western side for the last seven tribes. All right? So that begins to be spelled out in the beginning of this chapter, and then it's going to continue. We talked about the ark to this point. Verses 2 through 10 describe how the remaining tribes are going to receive their portions, and then the first division of that is going to describe the land of Benjamin, starting in chapter 18, verse 11, and going through the end of the chapter. So we're going to go very quickly through that to get to the next chapter. The lot of the tribe of children of Benjamin came up according to their families, and here's their border. Verse 12, the border on the north begins at the Jordan, goes down the border of Jericho, goes down the side to Jericho in the north, to the mountains westward, ends at the wilderness of Beth-Aven. The border goes over there to Luz, which used to be called Bethel. Anyway, the rest of the borders are spelled out, north, south, east, and west, as you would expect it to be in just about every one of these descriptions. And then you get down to the end of that description, verse 21, here are the cities that the tribe of the children of Benjamin received, and those names are spelled out. 14 cities and their villages, verse 28, which is the inheritance of the children of Benjamin according to their families. Next chapter, chapter 19, contains an account of the land that's given to the descendants of Simeon, one of the sons of Jacob, who became Israel. Remember, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah. Reuben, Simeon, Reuben the oldest. They had already received land on the other side, and now Simeon's going to receive land. Second lot comes out for Simeon. For the tribe of the children of Simeon, according to their families and their inheritance, was within the inheritance of the children of Judah. So they're going to be circumscribed, that is surrounded by the land of Judah. And here's what they're going to inherit. Spelled out the names of the cities and their villages through verse 6. Names of cities and their villages, verse 7. Villages around that, verse 8. The inheritance of the children of Simeon was included in the portion of the children of Judah. For the portion of the children of Judah was too much for them. Therefore, the children of Simeon had their inheritance within the inheritance, that is, within the borders of that people. So Judah received a larger share, and it was too much, so Simeon gets a portion of that. All right? So that's chapter 19. And the inheritance is going to be given to Simeon. All right, so we take up in chapter 19, verse 10, third lot comes out for the children of Zebulun, according to their families and their borders. Borders east, south, west, north, and so forth, spelled out again in verses 10 through verse 14, and includes these cities, 12 cities and their villages. This is the inheritance of the children of Zebulun, according to their families, their cities. Verse 17, fourth lot comes out for Issachar, their children. Here's their territory. It's going to include these cities, verses 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 16 cities and villages. That's the sum total of their inheritance. Next lot, the fifth one, comes out for the tribe of the children of Asher. and their families. Again, the territory includes these cities by name, these territories, verses 25, verse 26. Direction turns towards the sunrise, that's east. These cities, northward. These cities, including these cities, Ebron and so forth, as far as the greater Sidon, verse 28. Border turns again to Ramah, the fortified city of Tyre. That's going to be over towards the coast. Then the border turns to Hosa and ends at the sea and at the region of Achzib. Also, Ummah, Aphek, Rehob were included, 22 cities and their villages. That's the inheritance of the children of Asher. Land of Naphtali, sixth lot. What are they going to receive? Here's where their border starts. Verse 33, territory is going to include from the Terebinth Tree and Za'anayim and goes towards the Jordan. From Heloth, the border, it's going to go towards Asnath Tabor, goes out from there toward Hukok. Joins Zebulun on the south side, so the land that was mentioned is Zebulun's in verses 10 through 16 of the chapter. Their border, they border this land that's going to be part of Naphtali. They receive these cities, fortified cities, Zidim, Zer, Hamath, and so forth. 19 cities mentioned in their villages, verse 38, that's their inheritance. Seventh lot comes out for the tribe of Dan. According to their families, what do they receive? Starting in verse 21, the names of the places are mentioned. And here are the borders, starting in verse 47. And then that's all of their cities and their villages, verse 48. And finally, when they made an end of dividing the land as an inheritance according to their borders, the children of Israel gave an inheritance among them to Joshua, the son of Nun. That's Joshua, who, of course, is the leader after Moses had died. According to the word of the Lord, which they gave him, the city which he asked for, Timnath-Serah, in the mountains of Ephraim, and he built the city and dwelt in it. These were the inheritance which Eleazar, the priest, Joshua, the son of Nun, and the heads of the fathers of the tribes of the children of Israel divided as an inheritance by lot in Shiloh, where the tabernacle was, chapter 18, verse 1, before the Lord at the door of the tabernacle of meeting. So they made an end of dividing the country. Now, we're going to take up in the next session, we're going to finish the last few chapters, 20 through 24 of the book of Joshua, in which we talk about the cities of refuge, the cities that the Levites are going to receive, Eastern tribes, two and a half tribes, after they help conquer the land on the western side of the Jordan, they're going to go back to their land. And we're going to see a conflict that almost happened but didn't happen because of total misunderstanding, a lack of communication, because of an altar that the two and a half tribes build at the Jordan River. Then we're going to see the last two chapters, chapter 23, chapter 24, the end of Joshua's life, his farewell address, and the covenant he asked them to make. And so we will segue from those last few chapters into the opening chapters of the book of Judges in our next lesson.